Please fold your hands, repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayamudiraye. Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhakti Bhavati Naishtige. Thank you very much. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, chapter 14, King Chitraketu's Lamentation, text number 27, 28, and 29. So reading myself, 27 and 28. Shri Shuka Vacha Itti Arthita Sa Bhagavan Kripalur Brahmana Sutaha Shrapayita Vacharum Tvashtram Tvashtaram Ayajat Vibhu. In response to the request of Maharaj Chitraketu, Angira Rishi, who was born of Lord Brahma's mind, was very merciful toward him. Because the sage was a greatly powerful personality, he performed a sacrifice by offering oblations of sweet rice to Tvashta. Jeshta Shrestha Cha Yaragyo Mahishinam Cha Bharata Namna Krita Dyutis Tasyai Yagyo Chishtam Adadijaha. O Parikshit Maharaj, best of the Bharatas, the remnants of the food offered in the yagya were given by the great sage Angira to the first and most perfect among Chitraketu's millions of queens, whose name was Krita Dyuti. Please repeat. Athaha Nripatim Rajan Bhavitaikasatavatmajah Harsha Shoka Pradastubhyam Iti Brahma Suto Yaya Athaha Nripatim Rajan Bhavitaikasatavatmajah Harsha Shoka Pradastubhyam Iti Brahma Suto Yaya अथानृपतिं राजन् भाविता भवितैकसतवात्मजः हर्षशोकप्रदस्तुभ्यम् इति ब्रह्मसुतो ययो. प्लीज चैंट. माताजी, अथ दरआफ्टर आह सेड नृपतिम अंटू द किंग राजन ओ किंग चित्रकेतु भविता देयर विल बी एकः वन तव योर आत्मजह सन हर्ष शोक जुबिलेशन एंड लेमेंटेशन ब्रदर हु विल गिव तुभ्यम अनटू यू इति दास ब्रह्मसुत Angira Rishi, the son of Lord Brahma, Yayo, left. Thereafter, the great sage told the king, O great king, now you will have a son who will be the cause of both jubilation and lamentation. The sage then left without waiting for Chitraketu's response. Please repeat. Thereafter, the great sage told the king, O great king, now you will have a son who will be the cause of both jubilation and lamentation. The sage then left without waiting for Chitraketu's response. Purport. The word Harsha means jubilation and Shoka means lamentation. The king was overwhelmed with joy when he understood that he would have a son. Because of his great jubilation, he could not actually understand the statement of the sage Angira. Srila Prabhupada is explaining that there's a particular way in which Chitraketu received this information. He filtered it through his the way he was feeling. This, in present term, is called cognitive dissonance, where you're not connecting with the actual reality. You're not hearing exactly what is being said, but you're accepting it in the way you think it is being said. So this is something we all do. Somebody says something, but we filter it in the way that we think they mean. So right now Chitraketu is doing this. I'll repeat, the king was overwhelmed with joy when he understood that he would have a son. So immediately he was under the influence of the being overjoyed, harsha. It was not a philosophical feeling. He was actually overwhelmed with, he was overcome with this feeling of joy. So now, because of his great jubilation, he could not actually understand the statement of the sage Angira. He accepted it to mean that there would certainly be jubilation because of the birth of his future son, but that he would be the king's only son, and being very proud of his great wealth and empire, would not be very obedient to his father. So this is what he is taking, this shoka, the lamentation part. In other words, he was already joyous about having a son, but he thought, my only lamentation will be that he will not be, he will be a little impudent, a little proud, a little arrogant of the fact that he's the only son of this great and vast kingdom. So thus the king was satisfied, thinking, let there be a son. It does not matter if he's not very obedient. In Bengal, there is a proverb that instead of having no maternal uncle, it is better to have a maternal uncle who is blind. So he is interpreting it like this, that I'll have a son, but he may have some blemish, some fault. So that's okay. I don't need a perfect son, but I need a son. So Prabhupada is citing a parallel where there's a proverb in Bengali where some or other, it's a feeling of a lacking if there is no maternal uncle, your mother's brother. So if a mother's brother is even blind, that's better than no maternal uncle. The king accepted this philosophy, thinking that a disobedient son would be better than no son at all. The great sage Chanakya Pandit says, Ko artha putrena jatena yo na vidvan na dharmikaha kanena chakshusha kimba chakshu pidaiva kevalam. What is the use of a son who is neither a learned scholar nor a devotee? Such a son is like a blind, diseased eye which always causes suffering. So Chanakya Pandit is saying the opposite. He is saying that actually it is better not to have a son. If one's son is going to be neither of two things, neither is going to be learned scholar nor a devotee, yo na vidvan na dharmika, neither he is vidvan na dharmika, neither he is Krishna conscious. Nevertheless, the material world is so polluted that one wants to have a son even though he is useless. This attitude was represented in the history of King Chitraketu. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unamilitam Yena Tasamai Shri Gurave Namaha Namaum Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyadesha Tarine Jayo Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Athah Nipatim Rajan Bhavitaikas Tavatmajah Harsha Shoka Pradastubhyam Iti Brahma Suto Yayo. Thereafter the great sage told the king, O great king, now you will have a son who will be the cause of both jubilation and lamentation. The sage then left without waiting for Chitraketu's response. The subject of the purport is on the issue of submissive hearing. In the case of Chitraketu, it is the lack of submissive hearing. He is not hearing actually, attentively, what is being said and understanding. And therefore he is misleading himself because he has misunderstood what was said. This is a caution to us that we should hear attentively and perfectly, correctly. Otherwise, we will execute whatever we understand based on our faulty understanding. So how can our actions be correct if they're based on a faulty understanding? This is something that happens when people say, I know what the Bhagavad Gita says. And therefore Srila Prabhupada had to bring out an edition called, well, this is what the Bhagavad Gita actually says. This is Bhagavad Gita as it is. This is the word for word meaning of every verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore this is what it says. Otherwise people dispute. Shishi Gornita, Shishi Krishna Balram, Shishi Radha Shyam Sundar Lalita Vishaka Devi Ki Jai. Otherwise there is dispute. No, I think this is what it says. Somebody else comes along and says, no, I think this is what it says. But Bhagavad Gita actually does say something uncontentious. It is not open to everyone else's interpretation. So therefore we have this phrase called as it is, yatharu, just as it is, just the correct way. Even in programming, you have to make sure that nothing gets changed. Your calculation has to be correct. So they have what they call checksum. They have to check. Double check. It happens in auditing also. When you are auditing accounts, you have to check, you have to see if the sums are actually correct. Because there is a lot of problems when they are incorrect. So how much more so is it in spiritual life? In spiritual life, if you think somehow you have a concept of religion in which you are the body. So now this is a very misleading dharma. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it's called Kaitava Dharma, cheating religion. A religious principle that is based on the idea that you are the body. When in fact you are not the body. So when some scripture says that there shall be resurrection, they think the body will come back, that very same body. So now this puts you in a difficulty of looking very foolish from the point of view of science. Because which body comes back? You have had many bodies in this one lifetime, from baby to boy to youth to old age. And suppose your body was diseased, cancerous, that body will come back. So this puts somebody in a quandary. In a difficulty of their own making. Because he does not have submissive hearing, attentive hearing. So the brahmachari actually is told or taught how to be obedient. First, simply to obey and not to change the instruction by one iota. This is the first training. And that's why this training has to begin when he is very young. When he does not have a fertile imagination and he does not concoct his own idea. He simply obeys. Very important. Now one may say this is fanaticism. But who has given a proof that fanaticism is necessarily bad? I'll give you an example. If you go to a doctor and the doctor says, well, this disease needs to be cut out. Then somebody says, well, he's a fanatic. He doesn't compromise. Why cut out? Why not something in between? So this is the kind of difficulty. Nobody questions a doctor when he says that cancer should be cut out, that a diseased limb should be cut, gangrene should be cut. But when a spiritual master says that you wash the floor, and then you say, but we live in a democracy. I don't agree with I should wash the floor. Then everything breaks down. One must have trust in authority. One must hear authority very attentively. And therefore one should not change anything by one iota. So this is called Arsha Prayog. Following the precedent of the Arsha, the previous authority, to utilize that understanding, to accept that understanding, Prayog, of the Arsha, of the great personalities. Without question, without any personal feelings on the matter. Prabhupada explains this at some length in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita. He says that when Krishna says, I spoke this science to a sun god many millions of years ago, the student of the Vedic literature, he accepts that. And why should he not? Why should he disbelieve? So this is an illustration here. Chitraketu is deceiving himself. He is thinking, very good, thank you very much. Thank you for the blessing. I'll take care of things from now on. And of course, the sage disappears. He realizes there is no need for me. The king will now go through jubilation and he will not come down from it until lamentation. He will come back to him when he is able to hear. He will not hear him now. Actually, Chitraketu was not waiting anything further from the sage. But after some time, so sometimes a person is not very receptive to preaching. That's when you should go away. Let the course of nature, let nature take its course. Nature is so designed that Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita again that by nature, everyone feels frustration at every moment. He feels perplexed, uses the word perplexity. Because nature is so designed, it will make you perplexed. It will not be satisfying. There is a pinprick, Prabhupada writes in the introduction, in the preface to the Srimad Bhagavatam. There is a pinprick within society, and that is why there are quarrels and fighting, even amongst nations. And that pinprick is this lack of Krishna consciousness. But Krishna consciousness requires that a person learns to listen as it is. So we go through this process of repeating the shloka, repeating the translation, repeating. Shravanam kirtanam. Your kirtan is what you have heard, not what you concoct. You repeat what you have heard. And it sounds simplistic. It sounds as if the only qualification you need is to be a parrot. But actually there's a lot more behind it. Behind this repeated repeating is this process of purification, where your misconceptions are driven away. And the reality, the truth of the statement takes hold in your heart. This is actually a process one has to do with his mind. The mind is needed. Some people think repeating is a mindless activity. Actually, repeating is a mindful activity. Only a person who is full possession of his mind can repeat. Otherwise, you cannot. So if you ask a student, what did I just say? So the person who was not paying attention, he'll fumble. He'll concoct something. And whoever was listening attentively, he will repeat word for word. I'm reminded of some activities we used to do in Brahmachari life. So after class, we were a few group of Brahmacharis. We would say, okay, repeat the class. What do you mean, repeat the class? Well, he spoke Srimad Bhagavatam, didn't he? No, what did he say? So this tuned us. It was a great habit. That could you actually repeat the whole class? Word for word. Now, if you understand that that's what you have to do, during class you're very attentive. You're listening. If you're going to be tested at the end by saying, repeat the class word for word. Now all of a sudden, you have a different approach to your sitting in class. So this is the training of the brahmachari, that he should hear very attentively. And this hearing makes him into a very perfect person when he's fully graduated from the brahmachari ashram. He has instant recall. Not only does he have instant recall, he has the ability to utilize what he can recall. So if you cannot even recall, how can you utilize? And if you cannot utilize, how can you benefit? Do you follow? We'll repeat. You need to have instant recall. Because a situation will come up. You cannot say, let me look up the Veda base. You have to have instant recall. Activities happen very fast. Because you have instant recall, there is a chance you can apply what you recall. Now, because you apply what you recall, there's a possibility of benefiting from that instruction. So this is the process. This is the necessity of repeated hearing and attentive hearing. Attentive hearing means you need your mind to hear. You need your intelligence to be able to understand what you hear. Otherwise you cannot. So hearing is not a mindless activity, it's actually a mindful activity. It's the most important activity. Now, there's a further dimension which is especially applicable to devotees. Because you were able to recall, because you were able to apply what you recall, because you benefited from it, now you can think of Krishna. Savai mana Krishna padaravindayo. Chitraketu couldn't do it. He was overcome by jubilation. He could not remember that I am not this body. He could not remember that this son is not my son. And he could not think of Krishna. You see? Therefore he's overcome. Prabhupada would say, there is Krishna or there is Maya. Instantly you're not in Krishna consciousness, you're in Maya. Chitraketu was in Maya. Because he was unable to be Krishna conscious. This is the art, this is the science. This is the science, this is how it works. This is the necessity of Srinvatam Swakatha Krishna. To hear Krishna Katha, Punya Shravana Kirtana, simply by that Shravana, that hearing, one is becoming purified. Hridi antastha, within his core of his heart, not superficially, in a very deep fashion, in a very true fashion, not superficial. Superficial means you go through the pretense, but you're still not purified. Still your mind is on sense objects. So attentive hearing is the difference between a pretender and getting the real benefit. I just spent some time with my sister's grandchildren. So they have a game called pretend games, pretend. So they're having pretend cookies. With the pretend cookie, your hunger is not going to go away. You need to eat real. So if you do pretend devotional service, if you do pretend hearing, you're not going to get the benefit of being Krishna conscious, of your heart being purified. And the most important thing, you're not going to get the higher taste. Because you did not do it attentively. This is how important it is. You got cheated. You simply got cheated. This cheating is a very interesting point. Srila Prabhupada's own words in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He said, my God brothers, they wanted followers, temples and money. Krishna gave them followers, temples and money, but he did not give them the power to preach. This is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, we may get a position within the temple because we knew the right people, we went to the right meeting and we said the right things and we said yes sir and we got the position. But we may not get Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness you get only one way, and that is through pure devotional service. No other way. You cannot have it by doing something that Shikuni would be very proud of. You know, the mama, the bad uncle of Duryodhan. You know, we're speaking of the blind uncle. Here's the bad uncle. Very clever at politics. Politics may achieve your kingdom, but it will not give you Krishna consciousness. It's interesting, Shikuni, by his politics, got the army of Krishna, but not Krishna. So you can actually become very big, successful without Krishna, but you will not have Krishna. So the student, the intelligent student, learns Krishna is the most important, not the opulence of the material world. Krishna is the most important. At the time of death, opulence of the material world will not save you, will not save us, but Krishna will save us. That is the subject of the next canto, how Ajamil gets saved. I'm sorry, it's the topic of this canto, that Ajamil gets saved. So we have to have a sense, this requires intelligence, this requires the mind, that I should listen submissively. I should be obedient. Why? Because otherwise how will I be Krishna conscious? Thank you very much. Question? Can you just pick the mic? Actually, whilst you feel the importance of this question that you're asking, it has a very simple solution actually. The idea of a spiritual master is he corrects you. He sees, oh, he didn't understand. You follow? The idea of having a spiritual master is he's your mentor. He's watching you and he's seeing, did you understand or not? And he's, because you, it cannot come from you. That's my point. If you have a proper spiritual master-disciple relationship, it means that he's your personal trainer. He's your coach. He says, oh, he corrects you. He's your teacher. Oh, didn't do this right. So he has to correct. He has to correct. And that's the only way. If you say that the student has to figure it out, the student is helpless to filter it through his false ego. He has no choice. That's how he is. Now he has to be trained by a person who knows how to correct. Just like take anything. If you're a teacher of mathematics, a student makes a mistake. So You being a teacher, you should be able to see the mistake and correct it and explain. He'll make the mistake again, a different one, and you correct it again, 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 until he makes no more mistakes. Until one day, he always gets it right. So that's the dynamic of this institution of having a spiritual master. Meaning, now I have somebody who can correct me. Now I'm not on my own. Otherwise, one is on his own. This institution of guru and shishya, the spiritual master and disciple, is to help the faulty disciple to become faultless. He starts faulty. Arjuna is a disciple, Krishna is his spiritual master. Krishna is correcting him. Asochyan anvasochastam pragyavat. So Arjuna first submits his paper. This is my homework. Swajanam Krishna, these are my people, how can I kill them? The teacher says, no. Now because Arjuna has accepted him as spiritual master, he's willing to be corrected. That's the benefit. And therefore he does get corrected. He did have a false ego, he had a false understanding, he thought I'm the body. So that's what's needed. We must have a living relationship with a spiritual master who is able to correct me. That's the need. Is that okay? Pass it. Explain proper hearing.
Say you establish the subject matter as improper hearing.
Yes.
You are asking from what perspective you want us to accept it, or from your personal perspective?
I didn't get it. Does somebody say they can understood Prabhuji? Then later. I didn't get the last part. You can try again. In the beginning, I spoke of improper hearing. That's what you said.
You establish the subject matter as improper hearing.
You're right.
Asking for clarification, is it you want us to accept it as the subject matter, or is it just in case you don't understand the subject matter?
I'm so sorry. I honestly didn't. I mean, if somebody understood, they're welcome to explain.
It has to do with you explain improper hearing. So I thought maybe it's what is the angle of proper hearing, and it's how are you establishing the point of proper hearing based on.
I said that Chitraketu misunderstood Angira Muni when he said, your son will give you Harsha Shoka Pradha. Harsha Shoka Pradha. He will give you jubilation and lamentation. So Chitraketu didn't accept it like that. He accepted it that he'll give me great joy, but he may have some fault. I explained that at length, I think, in the beginning. In the purport it says that. That he thought there may be, so he think, I can tolerate this lamentation. He did not understand the full purport, that he will be totally, the son will be the cause of my lamentation. Full and complete lamentation, not just partial, not just that he may be a bad boy. He will die. So he could not hear and he could not understand. So he interpreted it in his own way. He'll be a boy, and my boy gives me great joy, he may have some faults. But that's okay. Does that make sense? I don't know. That wasn't the point. Right, what is the point? Right.
Then you begin to decide. So I'm asking is that what you expect us to accept, or is just wrong question or tradition?
I was saying that we as students of the Bhagavatam should learn from this lesson that we should have attentive hearing and don't make the mistake of hearing like Chitraketu. When the Bhagavad Gita as it is says, you're not the body, we should try to accept that fully. There are people who understand Bhagavad Gita on a bodily concept of life, on the fact that they're the body, not the soul. So that's improper hearing. They're hearing Bhagavad Gita, but they're getting cheated. Prabhupada compares it in the introduction, not in the introduction, sorry, in the purport, that it's like a bee licking the bottle of honey, not the honey. So everyone's reading or referring to Bhagavad Gita, but it's not the proper understanding of Bhagavad Gita. So we can also do many things in Krishna consciousness in an improper way, in the same way. So the difference between improper and perfect hearing is attentive. You are attentive to hear as it is. Just like when we learned Bhagavad Gita as it is from Srila Prabhupada, it changed everything in our life. Prabhupada said the proof is people are now becoming devotees of Krishna. All the other Bhagavad Gitas, there's not one devotee of Krishna. That's Prabhupada's own statement. So when we change, when we become transformed, when we're able to think of Krishna, that means proper hearing. If you're able to be Krishna conscious, that means you are doing proper hearing. If you're able to think of Krishna, you're doing proper hearing. If you don't have a higher taste, then you are not doing proper hearing. Is that okay? I'm sorry, I'm not fully clear on your question, so I can't fully say I answered it. How do I? You were trying to summarize? Alright. Anyway, thank you. Granth Raj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you.